Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today is a very exciting program because we're talking about something that affects certainly all of us in Southern California, many states along the southern border of the United States, but then really it influences almost every other state in the country. And that's immigration, divorce, but this is going to specifically focus on children. And we have a wonderful guest today. We have attorney Carlos Garcia. He's an immigration attorney, and he's with the firm Fernando, Romo, and Associates. Welcome, Carlos.
Hi, thank you, Judy. Thank you for having me.
Carlos, your parents are Salvadoran natives, and you have many Salvadoran clients. Are you typical of immigration attorneys in that you work with people from your native country? Is this an incentive?
It was definitely the reason why I went to law school. Law school presented an opportunity to help people like my parents, who a long time ago, when they first came to the country, needed help obtaining lawful status in the U.S., and it's an opportunity to give back. I would say it's not typical. Law schools are still predominantly Caucasian, not typically bilingual, so I relish the opportunity to provide a face and a person that an immigrant can talk to in their own language and feel comfortable doing so.
I think that's really needed. I do, because in the field of divorce, even when people call, if I could speak Spanish, which is the predominant other language in Southern California, I would be doing very well for myself. So I'm working on that. So I understand that bond, and I understand that interest in giving back. And before we go any further, I want to say to the audience, this is what I learned in doing some research on immigration before this show, and that is the word immigrant is interchangeable with the phrase foreign national. Is that not true?
Yes.
And I kind of like using both. The foreign national sounds, I don't know, it just sounds softer for some reason to me than immigrant, but is there any preference for you?
No, I think foreign national also, I think, is respectful of another person's origin. Immigrant implies that you are defined by your presence here in the United States, but that's not necessarily the case. If you're a foreign national, you are a national of Mexico, Peru, Brazil, but you are foreign to the United States, but you are a national of your own country.
I like that. Well said. So I'm going to focus on that because I like it too. It sounds good. All right. Now for the audience, you are used to me asking a series of questions and we learn that way. But I want to start this episode out with a story that I think you're going to find fascinating because I found it on the listserv for the immigration section for, I believe, the Beverly Hills Bar. And it fascinated me. And it's about children and immigration and adoption. So here's the story. And Carlos is going to answer us with each portion of the story. So here it is. A child is born outside of the United States to a U.S. citizen father and a non-citizen mother. They bring her to the U.S. as a baby, claiming she is a U.S. citizen. And parenthetically, it says this was in the old days when the Customs and Border Patrol didn't ask for proof. So would you comment on this portion first?
Yes. A couple things that jump out immediately. One is that the U.S. citizen is the father as opposed to the mother. That has immigration consequences as to whether that child is an American citizen. And two, it's unclear whether the couple is married, which also has consequences as to whether the child is in fact an American citizen. I can tell you that it is much easier for a U.S. citizen born abroad to a U.S. citizen mother to prove their citizenship than it is with a father.
Why?
Because there is a presumption that if a mother gives birth to a child, they will play a part in that child's life, and there is a lower burden of proof. If the child is born to a U.S. citizen father, you must prove that you played an active role in that child's life up until age 18, I believe.
Okay, and what if a birth certificate then accompanied the child with an unwed couple?
Then the burden would be on the father in this instance to prove that he played an active role in the child's life up until age 18.
Okay. All right, we go on. Now they're in the United States. So child is adopted at age 7 by U.S. citizen parent. Before we go into the next part, let's think about that a second. Why would the child have to be adopted? Is there some formal process a U.S. citizen father, as opposed to mother, would have to go through if they had a child in another country?
Yes, it's a type of legitimization. So the father would have to prove that he is, first of all, the child's father, which maybe there might be some uncertainty about that. Secondly, that he would have to prove his citizenship, as well as the fact that the child is now in the U.S., that they are also a citizen. So there is a process. Maybe it's called adoption in this scenario. But yes, there is a process that the father would have to undergo to prove the citizenship of his daughter in this scenario.
Do you know, through your work or any other experience, whether children born in hospitals in other countries, and I know this is such a broad question, have the same type of paperwork that we have in this country? And there's different types of paperwork people go through in the hospital. There could be the paperwork of true parentage, that yes, I am the parent, I know I am, this is my blood, versus maybe you're not the blood parent, but I want you to be the parent, mom says to a man or another woman.
Yes, I know that in Latin American countries there are different, I guess, hierarchies of paperwork, as you said, that one saying, yes, I am strictly the biological father. I know in Latin American culture, you do so by giving the child your last name. That is you accepting the child as your own. So that has a degree of gravitas to it. Secondly, there's the issue of not having a father listed, which for a long time you could not do in Latin American countries, but with changing times, I guess, is now a possibility. So there are different levels of parentage you can note on the birth certificate, but it varies across a wide spectrum of Latin American countries.
And thank you. And lastly, in our story, child is now 48 years old and realizes for the first time that she's not a U.S. citizen when she is looking through her deceased parents' documents and finds her birth certificate from another country. Is she or is she not a U.S. citizen? There's some code they reference, which isn't going to make any difference to the audience, I don't think, but it's under 301C. What is 301C?
301C refers to a portion of the INA, the Immigration and Naturalization Act, under which children who are born abroad derive citizenship from their parents. So there's different types of citizenship. There's birthright citizenship from being born in the U.S. You can become a naturalized citizen, which means that you go through the process of becoming a legal permanent resident and then a citizen. And then there's something called derived citizenship, where you are born abroad, you are a foreign national, but you derive your citizenship through either your mother or your father. So in this case, she would have derived citizenship
through father, because he was the U.S. citizen in this story.
If he did everything he was supposed to do, which I am skeptical about.
Because of the way the story is laid out?
Yes.
I mean, this is a real story. I got it from the listserv, so this is something one attorney is actually dealing with.
And exceedingly common along border towns throughout the Southwest, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, where the border is very fluid and people traverse the border, or especially back in the time period in which this fact scenario is played out, going back and forth over the border, being born on one side of the border, it's not a big deal until you realize it's a huge deal.
This is fascinating. This is true. Okay, so let me backtrack a little bit and get to some other scenarios. Why? This is an odd question, but it's something I've experienced, Carlos, and that is, why do so many U.S. citizens marry foreign nationals and then get divorced in under 5 years, sometimes closer to 2 years? What reasons? Do you find this? Because I do.
Yes. So the magic number in immigration is two years. And frankly, it's very arbitrary. When you are a U.S. citizen and you marry a foreign national and you help that person obtain lawful status in the U.S., whether you've been married for two or more years is a critical difference. So if you're married for less than 2 years, at the end of the two-year period, you have to prove that you are in a good faith relationship with that individual and they did not marry you exclusively for immigration benefits. That's how immigration defines a good faith marriage, a marriage not for immigration benefits. So if you are married for 3 years and then you legalize the status of your spouse, then you get automatically a 10-year permanent residence as opposed to a two-year conditional residence, where if you do it within the two-year period, and it's strictly calendar years from the date of your marriage to the date that the conditional residence is granted by immigration.
Okay, so then my next question was, how short-term can a marriage be in order for a foreign national not to experience fear in losing their status?
So the answer to that would be 2 years. But if I marry a person, I can file for that person the day after, as soon as I have a marriage certificate in hand. There is no length of marriage that needs to be, there's no length that the marriage needs to have been before I can petition that person and try to legalize their status.
Okay.
So we can go to Las Vegas, which many of our clients do, get a marriage certificate in hand and start the paperwork days, weeks after being married.
Okay. Then what are the fears that a foreign national has when asked for a divorce? Well, any time from 0 to 5 years, but certainly around that 2 year mark.
Yes. So if the foreign national were to ask for a divorce within the 2 year period.
No, if the U.S. citizen. It's typically the U.S. citizen that asks for the divorce in my office.
Wow. Okay. If the U.S. citizen spouse is asking for a divorce from the foreign national within a 2 year period, they are frankly putting the foreign national in a very challenging position because now they have to prove that they entered the marriage again in good faith. But maybe the American citizen spouse doesn't want to cooperate. Maybe they want to hold some leverage in divorce negotiations, which you could tell me all about. People will do as they will, but the U.S. citizen would definitely put their foreign national spouse in a delicate position, to say the very least.
Okay, now, but you brought something up interesting. I hadn't thought about it this way. What if the foreign national wants out of the relationship, marriage isn't going well, we're almost at the two-year mark, but this is not what the foreign national bargained for. Maybe there's some abuse going on. Now what does the foreign national do?
I think there's a red line there. I think once you mention abuse, cruelty, you have to do what's in your best interest. And that may be obtaining a divorce and separation from that American citizen spouse, kind of regardless as to what the consequences that will be on your immigration status. If you are just having a tough time at home, this isn't, you know, lollipops and unicorns and rainbows like you thought it was gonna be, maybe you find a way to get to this 2 year mark and then, you know, go your separate ways.
If the foreign national can really prove abuse, maybe the police have to be called. Maybe there's an enormous degree of control, leveraged by the U.S. citizen because they feel they can now that they've got a foreign national in the country.
Very often the case.
Does the foreign national get to use that in their benefit and not maybe get deported or have to leave because they entered in good faith? They had no idea.
Yes. So then they would, if they are able to prove that they were the victim of battery or extreme cruelty, those are the phrases that immigration uses, then yes, they are able to keep their status without the cooperation of their abusive or mean husband. I think it's key that immigration put in the phrase extreme cruelty. So it need not rise to the level of physical altercations between partners. But if I tell you you're only here because I wanted you here, you wouldn't be anything in this country without me. I brought you to this country, I can have you sent back. Just hurtful, cruel statements are enough for this, for the requirement of a joint filing to be waived. So it, again, it need not be physical, just extreme cruelty is sufficient.
Excellent. Okay, I'm gonna ask that, I think you touched on this earlier, Carlos, but I think it bears repeating because as simple as things are to us in each of our areas of law, it's not so simple to other people,
right.
Non-legal people.
Right.
What is the path to status and citizenship once a divorce has been granted for the foreign national?
So once a divorce has been granted, if typically you need to wait only 3 years if you obtained your residency through an American citizen to become a U.S. citizen yourself. However, if you are no longer with that person, you have to wait 5 years from the day that you became a legal permanent resident to become an American citizen. So the hard part is, you know, there's these arbitrary numbers. There's 2 years, there's 3 years, there's 5 years. But as I'm sure you're well aware, length of marriage has nothing to do with the marriage success rate or with the bona fideness of a marriage, whether you made it 2, 3, 5 years. They're just numbers that USCIS seems to have, I'm sorry, that's the Immigration Service, that USCIS seems to have pulled out of a hat. There's nothing magical that happens at the 2-year mark where all of a sudden it really is the person you're going to be with forever.
So, and so it goes in
yes.
Our country too.
Yes.
With native born people here. I wanted to just make a footnote before I go on to the next question, and that is something I learned from the last 2 or 3 weeks just talking to immigration attorneys once I decided to do a series on immigration, and that is there is a responsibility on the part of the U.S. citizen to provide a decent life for the foreign national when they bring that person here, and the U.S. citizen is called a sponsor. Can you speak to the responsibility of the U.S. citizen?
Yes, and this is something that has been exceedingly in the news within the past 2 months due to the current administration's use of the phrase public charge. So just to backtrack a bit, if you petition a spouse to obtain lawful status in the U.S., you need to prove that your income levels are a certain amount. So you need to be, I believe, 125% above the poverty guidelines in order to petition your spouse. When you do so, you enter a contract stating that if my spouse obtains public benefits over the course of the next 10 years or until they become a U.S. citizen, I am willing to indemnify the government, pay back the government the amount of benefits that the spouse uses.
Oh.
So if the spouse receives $250 in SNAP benefits a month, the government has the right to sue the sponsor in that amount. Because the sponsor said, when I bring this person over to the U.S. and I provide or I help them obtain lawful status, I will be financially responsible for them.
And I also learned that in the area of spousal support, which I deal with in part of my divorce business, regardless of the U.S. or the state, every state is different. So California has their spousal support laws, And they kick in first. If you're married under 10 years, spousal support is available half the length of the marriage. If you're married over 10 years, it's negotiable. From however long you've been married to an open-ended, wow. one party dies or the recipient remarries, then it's over. But the other part to that that I learned, and I have to use this for one of my clients, and that is they're in a two-year marriage, so spousal support is available a year and 3 months. He gets that. That's fine. But his federal obligation as a sponsor is a 10-year commitment
yes.
to making sure their soon-to-be divorced ex, foreign national but legally carded foreign national in the United States, make sure they have they are living 125% above the poverty line. So after the California commitment is done, then they kick into the federal commitment of 10 years or 10 years minus a year and 3 months, something like that.
Right, and that's our wonderful system of federalism at play between state obligations and federal obligations. But yes, there have been instances of maybe the foreign national gets some leverage in this case, where they say, well, I am not going to become a U.S. citizen. And while I'm not a U.S. citizen, you still have to provide for me a certain amount of time because your obligation, you signed a contract that said 10 years when everyone was happy and we were going to live happily ever after in a hill on a bluff, you know? But if that's not the case and we separate after 5 years, why, what's the incentive to me to become a citizen? Because then I have to be completely self-sufficient. So maybe there the tables turn where the foreign national has leverage over the American citizen by not choosing to become a U.S. citizen themselves.
Okay, so that sounds very similar to why should I get another job? So, because yeah. then I'll just have to pay more spousal or child support. And that's the American conversation.
Yes, people are people regardless of citizenship or residency.
That's true. Isn't that true? We all are we are connected by our humanity.
Yes.
And our protectiveness. All right. Here's a good question. If a foreign national is married to a native from another country and is not divorced, can they actually file for divorce in the United States if they've both been living here for a while?
I know the answer to that is yes, after a brief conversation with you.
Thank you.
Explaining to me domicile and jurisdiction brought me back to my law school days. But yes, they can if they have lived in California for...
Well, the residency requirement is you have to live in the county that you're going to file in 3 months contiguous to the day of filing and 6 months anywhere in California contiguous to the day of filing.
Right. And okay. So another part of law school that came into mind was service, is serving the other party. Many times these couples have been separated for 5, 10, 15, 20 years... And serving the other party is extremely difficult. Many of these countries in Latin America have suffered periods of civil unrest with people who tragically died or were disappeared. And many spouses who are now in the U.S. don't know what happened to their previous spouse. You know, what if their husband was disappeared? What if their husband just went out and was never heard from again? So serving the other party is part of what provides the challenges, even if you are able to file for divorce here in California.
And this is actually something I don't know the answer to, but if we're not dealing with immigration issues and we're just dealing with two U.S. citizens, one person comes in, wants to file for divorce, but Judy, I have no clue where my spouse is. Mm-hmm. So the process is called publication. First of all, you have to really make an all-out effort through friends, through family, through previous employers, through social media even, to find your spouse anywhere in the world. If you can't do that and you have made what you consider to be an exhaustive effort, then you can ask the court to allow you to file by petition. And it's like filing for a fictitious name for a business. You choose the newspaper in your area where you live to publish for 6 weeks or so. I'm not clear because I don't do that. I actually give that business to a colleague of mine because it's so complicated. I don't want to make mistakes. I stick to what I know. You have, when the court says, okay, you can file, you can serve by petition, I mean, by publication. So you put the notice, there is a divorce, this is the case number, this is the petitioner, and this is when we filed the papers. And so you give it, what, 6 to 8 weeks, something like that. And if you don't get anything back, then the court allows the divorce to go forward. When we're serving to a known foreign national in another country, it's unbelievably expensive. Some countries we can't even serve in.
Wow.
So there's this thing called the Hague Convention that sets down the rules for how you can serve in another country and if you can serve in another country. And you really need an attorney for that.
Yes.
That's above my pay grade to talk about.
And it's my understanding that there are some countries in Latin America that are not members of the Hague Convention. So who knows? In short, if you can't serve your spouse and your spouse and you have been separated for perhaps decades, it is extremely challenging, which leads many people to then claim, oh, I've never been married, you know, wink, wink,
right.
Nudge, nudge. Because right. Now I'm in the U.S., I need to get married so I can get status, and it is a lot easier for me to just conveniently forget that I was ever married anywhere else. And I cannot tell you the amount of times that people come into the office and find themselves in that situation where they just want to forget all about marriage number one.
Interesting. And I mean, not that I or you promote this, but what are you going to do? I mean, if enough time has passed, 15 years, your country's been at war, more than nobody is left in the town that you know.
Records destroyed, records not kept.
I mean, probably a good chance they're not around anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a very tough situation. Okay, now we're going to go back to kids. Now that we laid the groundwork for that, we're going to go back to children. So if a foreign national has a minor child from another marriage in their native country, how is this child viewed in terms of their immigration status, considering the child is here in the United States?
So the child is not the son of a U.S. citizen?
No. The child is a child of the foreign national other parent.
Okay.
And the foreign national who's here probably wanting to get married or already married. It doesn't matter. Either wanting to get married or already married, but there's this child born of that parent and another parent in another country.
Right. So that is what we call a derivative, where the only way for this child, and child in immigration terms is anyone younger than 18 and unmarried.
That's a minor here.
That's
okay,
right.
Comports.
So they would have to be the stepchild, which means a marriage. So the American citizen would have to marry the foreign national and then have a separate petition for that stepchild, for their now stepchild. So interestingly enough, even though it is a minor and a mom in this case, for example, you would have to file a separate petition, one for the mother and another for the child. They don't come as a package.
What would the petition for the mother be?
For her to obtain lawful status in the U.S. as well.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I think this may be just a different version of that question. How can a minor child receive a legitimate immigration status when their immigrant parent marries a U.S. citizen? And then what is their path to citizenship? Did you just answer that, or is there another part to this?
Yes. So, I mean, in short, it depends on whether they're in the U.S. or whether they are still abroad. If they are in the U.S., it is a little bit more challenging. But typically in this fact pattern, the mom and the child are abroad and then they have to go to the U.S. embassy or the consulate in their home country to obtain their green cards once their petition has been approved.
I didn't even consider that. See, this is what you do for a living. I didn't consider there was that one step before the child's even here.
Right.
Okay. If the immigrant parent has to leave the foreign national, I want to get used to saying it that way, if the foreign national parent has to leave the U.S. and they have children with them in the U.S., what happens to the children? Do they have to go with the parent, their foreign national parent?
If this is in the case following a divorce?
You know, I think it's in the middle of the marriage in my scenario here. And okay. Then we're going to say post-divorce. Let's okay. do two ways.
So the foreign national, for whatever reason,
is
removed from the United States. Let's say the immigration judge enters an order of removal against them. They have 30 days to leave the United States. In that case, it is up to the parents to decide what they're going to do. Honestly, kind of regardless of status. So even if their children are U.S. citizens, many of them will choose to have them go back to the U.S. with them. Back to their...
Country of origin.
Country of origin. Because let's say you have a one-year-old and a three-year-old, even if they're American citizens, you are putting the parent who stays in the U.S. in an extremely trying situation where they are now without their spouse and they would have to raise two children on their own. I mean, not impossible. Millions of single parents do it every single day, but challenging. That is even if the children are U.S. citizens. If the children are not U.S. citizens, then I think it is that more likely that they go back with their mother to their country.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. If they're not U.S. citizens, they would leave with their parent. But if they are U.S. citizens, there's a discussion and there are options.
Right.
Okay, now, forgive me for this example, Carlos, but I watch reality shows on Bravo at night. Oh, thank God. Okay. Do you watch the New Jersey Housewives where Teresa and Joe Giudice have this immigration issue? Joe
they
never
have a criminal issue.
Well, they have. Okay. Very much so. And a deportation.
Texas, right? Texas? Is
New Jersey.
Yeah.
New Jersey. So the New Jersey Housewives, so the original cast members, mm-hmm. Teresa and Joe Giudice, they had three children when the show started, and a fourth was born, four daughters. Now we find out there's been mail fraud, tax fraud, mm-hmm. and they both were incriminated. Teresa goes to jail for a year and a few months first. Joe watches the kids, then Joe goes to jail for 3.5 years. That's to satisfy the fraud issues. While he's in jail, immigration gets involved. Hey, Joe, by the way, you never became a citizen, and you're an
aggravated felon. Mm-hmm.
He's now in Italy.
Yes.
So those kids didn't have to go because they were born in the U.S. to a legitimate U.S. citizen. And they could have gone if they wanted to freely to live with him in Italy.
Right.
But they didn't.
And they are teenagers? Or what's the span of...
Two are teenagers. One is an adolescent. One's still a kid.
Right. So I think a lot goes into that. But gender roles, it's the mother that's staying in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Probably makes it a little bit easier. The fact that they are all... girls, young women, right? So it might be easier for them to stay with their mother here in the U.S. as well. But let's say, what if the roles had been reversed? What if it was Mrs. Giudice who got removed? And then Joe's going to be here, stuck with four daughters that span from a very wide range.
Oh, that's interesting.
That'd be very challenging for Joe, I'm guessing.
Even though he is a criminal, a felon, and not a citizen, the girls love him. I don't think that's faked on the show. I think he really has a bond with those girls, but not with the U.S. government. So.
Right, and I think you brought up an interesting point where even you can serve your time in prison, but there are still immigration consequences. You know, it doesn't all go away just because you did your time. So you do your time, and then ICE, Immigration and Customs
right.
Enforcement, gets a hold of you. It's like, hey... you're a convicted felon, you got to go.
And he did.
And he did.
And he really did.
And he did.
And more than likely, they're going to get divorced. And you can serve people in Italy, I'm pretty sure.
And more than likely, if, from my understanding, the charges against them were severe, it is unlikely he will ever.
Oh, he's not. Yeah, from what I understand on the show, he'll never be able to come back ever.
Yes.
There's no making up for anything.
Yes. I think he's an aggravated felon, which would eliminate 99.99% of any chance of his ever being in the United States lawfully.
That's okay. We have a lot of people here. It made an interesting story, though. It really did.
It talks about gender roles and ages and citizenship of the children. You know, a lot of interplay there.
Okay. And in conclusion, I'm struggling with this because I'm looking at two questions and they're both interesting, so I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Can a U.S. citizen adopt a child from their foreign national spouse if there is no other parent alive in the country of origin? And how does this happen? Is this a normal adoption, or are there special layers of consideration to adopt?
This question is a little easier in that if the other parent is not alive, then it's pretty straightforward, because then the other parent would have sole custody, and obviously they'd be agreeable to the child being adopted by the U.S. citizen spouse.
And I'm going to add this onto it, and because this factors into family law. So if I'm not dealing with an immigration issue, I'm just dealing with a U.S.-born family, and there are children from another marriage in the family where the two spouses are getting divorced and they're in my office.
Right.
Even if the current spouse who has been raising these children, now there's another father, U.S., but the current father spouse who's about to get divorced has been raising the children, there's the obligation on that father to continue to financially support the children along with the original birth dad.
Yes.
Okay, so you found that too. You've worked with this as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Typically, I mean, that's not too common a scenario. Luckily, for better or worse, I have found that many parents who genuinely care about their children's well-being are all for the children being able to be born and raised in the United States and having all the opportunities available to them that this country provides that may not be the case throughout, you know, the bulk of Latin America. So, you know, I think in that scenario, both the foreign national parent is open and is okay with, you know, knowing that their children are going to have, you know, better prospects for a future here in the U.S.
So the U.S. citizen really doesn't have to adopt the children in order to remain connected if there has been an established bond for a little bit of time. This person is recognized as the support. The children recognize this father as their support, as well as recognize their birth father. They're now bonded to two fathers.
Yes.
And so both fathers work together.
Yes.
Okay, so adoption really doesn't have to happen. I'll conclude with this. How often do you see adoption taking place by a U.S. citizen with children, foreign national children?
So, and is he married to the mother of the...
Let's say yes in this case.
And she's the mother is a foreign national.
Correct.
And they want to adopt children that are not their own?
No. How often do you see the U.S. citizen father adopting the children the mother has brought with her? Do you see that very often?
No, he would have to petition them again to have them have lawful status in the U.S. Again, typically this happens while the children are abroad. So it's not adoption exactly. It's more of a petitioning and a legalization, so that when they do come to the U.S., they enter with lawful status.
Excellent. 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 This has been so fascinating.
Yeah,
I looked
could,
at the
talk
time.
We could talk for hours.
Without a doubt. And I hope you come back.
Definitely. I'd love to.
You know, there's so much to uncover here, and there's so much fear wrapped up into this that I would like to make it a goal to get rid of the fear. Let's educate everybody. Like, we all need an education about immigration anyway. I mean, most U.S. citizens have no clue about immigration and the different levels of immigration and how the discussion is not really a discussion. We don't have a discussion about immigration in this country. We just have positions.
If I have to see one more post on social media that says, why don't they just apply to become citizens, I'm going to go even grayer than I already am. It is just
because it's so difficult, right? And it's costly. People don't understand the expense and the time involved,
or even
right?
the sheer ability to even become a citizen. Not everybody can just become a citizen because they're here. You know, but that's a whole other it's a whole other topic of conversation. I'd love to get in with you next time.
Thank you. So we've been speaking to Carlos Garcia of the firm Fernando Romo and Associates. Carlos, how can people get in touch with you? Because everybody needs an immigration attorney when they're dealing with family law. How do they get in touch with you?
They can reach us. Email is probably best. They can reach us at romolegal@gmail.com.
Spell it.
romolegal@gmail.com. You can set up a consultation, come in the office, talk to Fernando. Explain about how you want to adopt, you know, dozens of kids from Mexico and bring them over to the U.S. And we'd be glad to help you with that.
Thank you so much. This
has
been.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So you've been listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, and you can get in touch with me at my email address, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com. Thank you so much for listening. And please subscribe to the podcast. Encourage other people going through divorce to subscribe. And we can learn and grow as a community. Take care. Talk to you next week.